From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
The Candy Skull by Ray Bradbury. Chapter 1, The Catacombs. In the morning light, shadows of the children ran and ran across the pink and blue tiles of the plaza, while on the bronze bench, old Thomas sat very withered, very indignant, waving his scarred hands at them. One small Mexican boy held a cape and a wooden sword. Another enacted the part of the enraged bull. "No, no," cried old Tomas. "No, this way, and this." He rose suddenly and stood to show the boys how to make a veronica. "So, and another so. You see? With a body this way, see?" The small boys ran, dodged, squealed. Later they came and said, "Show us your scars, old one." And old Tomas pulled out his hand-woven shirt to bare his right hip, once more to show them where the bull had gored 30 years ago. The boys touched the scar. "How long since you fought the bulls, old one?" "Before your mothers were born," he replied. A young Spanish woman crossed the plaza tiles. She wore tailored gray gabardine suit. Her hair was black and shining. Her head was high. She did not look at Tomas as she passed and went up the steps into the tourist hotel. Tomas watched her all the way. He saw how her ankles took the clear morning light. He saw how her dark, shining hair was. His eyes followed. His tongue moved on his lips ever so little. On the second floor balcony of the hotel, a moment later, a young pink blonde man suddenly appeared. Old Tomas narrowed his vision, his eyes tight, his mouth pressed shut. The young pink man on the balcony, looking down. The clean, loud tourist American who had driven into town last week. Old Tomas looked up at the clean man on the balcony. And when the clean tourist American turned and went back to his room, Tomas spat upon the pink and blue tiles and would no longer play with the children at their game. Robbie Sibber awakened this morning with a feeling as if something had happened. He couldn't tell exactly what or how or why, but something out of the ordinary had occurred during the night. He sat up and hung his legs over the edge of the bed and looked down at his feet for a long time. Then he remembered where he was. He remembered he was in Guanajuato, Mexico. He was a writer, and tonight was the Day of the Dead ceremony. He was in a little room on the second floor of a hotel, a room with wide windows and a balcony that overlooked the plaza where the children ran and yelled each morning. He heard them shouting now, and this was Mexico's death day. There was a smell of death all through Mexico you never got away from, no matter how far you went, no matter what you said or did, not even if you laughed or drank. Did you ever get away from death in Mexico? No car went fast enough, no drink was strong enough. He looked over at the lamp table in the dim light, and he did not recoil. With only a dull movement of his heart and his chest, he saw the white object that lay upon the table. A small white sugar candy skull. It was the kind of skull they eat on el Día de Muerte, the Day of Death. It was made of white sugar, and it would crumple if you held it tightly. It had sockets and teeth, and it glinted like a hard-packed snowball. It had his name on it, Robbie. The skull hadn't been there when he'd gone to sleep last night. It was there now. The room was cold. He got up and threw back the vast wooden doors over the windows that shut out the night air. He caught a glimpse of himself, blonde and pink-faced, in the wall mirror, as he stepped out on the balcony to take the sun and breathe the good air. He did not look back at the skull on the table. He didn't want to look at it. He looked instead from the balcony upon the small green plaza below, where the rococo bronze bandstand and the trees clipped into round green drums, and the tiles laid blue and pink on the walk, where people strolled arm in arm on Thursdays and Sundays, with the music hammering and crashing out into the silent Mexican sky. There was no music now. Children ran on the tiles. Old Tomas sat on a bronze bench, instructing them on something or other. Robbie Sibber went back into his room. He touched his face. He needed a shave. It was good feeling the warm early morning sunlight. It was nice living and moving about. His stomach was sickish. Too much tequila last night with Celia Diaz. His throat was sore. Too much singing. Someone rapped on the door. He started, laughed at himself, opened the door. Buenos dias, señor. The little cleaning woman stood in the hall. Would it be possible that he was ready for breakfast? The ham and eggs were awaiting him, and she would clean his room and set it right for him, if he so wished. Was this possible? This was possible. He then turned and caused her to follow him into the table where he pointed at the small sugar candy skull. He spoke to her in Spanish. Did she know where this came from? Had she seen anyone enter his room during the night? She looked at the skull and laughed. Death is a good thing in Mexico. It is a thing to talk of at dinner, at breakfast, with or without a drink, with or without a smile. No, señor, she gave him to understand. She had seen no one enter or leave his room. Was not the sugar skull fine? Such good lettering of the señor's name. Yes, he had to admit, the lettering was fine. He went down to breakfast, unshaved. As always, there was ham and eggs. The Mexican people, once they have happened on a good food, he thought, flay the thing to distraction. Ham and eggs every morning now for 2 weeks. Since arriving in Guanajuato, bearing his typewriter, it had been the same thing each morning at 9. He stared at his plate, gently grieved. Celia Diaz came across the dining room smiling. She wore a tailored gray gabardine suit, and her hair was black and shining. He rose to let her into her place, and they said their good mornings. It's a nice morning, she said. A very nice morning. Yes, he said. She had dark hair, a great lot of it, and dark eyes, large and inquiring and gentle, and full lips, and she did not look as a woman looks getting up in the morning. She was an anachronism. She looked as if it was 8 o'clock, the core of the evening, everything in its highest point, everything fresh and delightful. He looked at her. He didn't look away. You are tired, she said quietly. I am, he said. I came to Mexico a tired man. I live in Mexico a tired man. And I shall leave Mexico a tired man. It is a continuous state, having nothing to do with wine, women, or guitars. Nor is it the altitude which frequently causes me to have hot and cold flashes in the middle of the afternoon. No, it is none of these. Perhaps I know what it is, she said, not flickering her steady gaze that was always on him. You couldn't possibly know, he said. But I do. No, no, you'd never guess. He shook his head. I know Americans. They are always afraid of the same thing in Mexico. They always look over their shoulders in fear. They do not sleep. They digest poorly. They laugh and say it is the changing climate. It is not, she said. I know what it is. He put down his fork. What then is it? Death, she said. The sunlight fell through the wide French window and touched upon half her face, and illumined all the silverware and blazed upon the painted wooden bowls hung from the walls. She placed a small candy skull on the table. I stopped at your room just now, she said. The cleaning woman was there. I saw this on your table. He looked at the skull. You're afraid, she said. The lettering was very exquisite, very fine. Yes, he said at last, settling back in his chair. I'm afraid.
They had coffee to finish up the breakfast. Then they went out into the green Zocalo. They passed old Tomas, who sat on the bronze bench. "Señorita, señor," he said. "Tomas," they said, walking on, glancing at him briefly. The children came to play with old Tomas after they had walked by with capes and wooden swords. Celia and Robbie sat on a bronze bench and had a cigarette, one after the other. "Who would want to hurt you?" she asked. "I don't know," he flung down a used match. "Damn it, I don't know anyone in Mexico." "Why did you come to Mexico?" "To write. And it was that friend of mine, Douglas McClure." "Yes, I knew him. He was here in Guanajuato last year. He left suddenly one night. I never saw him again. I was surprised. He never wrote me." "Or me. His last letter was from here last September. Then he went up in thin air. Never heard from him again." "I know what you're thinking. I'm one of those half-cocked adventurers looking for trouble. Frankly, I'm selfish as hell. I came down to collect material for my novel. On the side, I'm looking for McClure. He wrote about you, Celia, in three of his letters. That's why I thought you might be able to help me." "I am not much good," she lifted her hands. "One week he was here, the next gone. He was very nice. We talked much and had many dinners together. When he vanished, I said to myself, 'Ah, these Americans.' I did not worry." "Did you look for him in Acapulco?" She smiled slyly. "Acapulco? That's all I hear. Everyone tells me go to Acapulco. That's where all the people go who vanish. I went. I didn't see any beachcomber that looked like Douglas McClure. Anyway, he was in this town last of all. His letters about you were very flattering, Celia. I thought, well, maybe this Celia Diaz has a Spanish sweetheart who got jealous of Douglas and killed him." "That is all very flattering and romantic, but hardly true," she said. "I am the modern Mexican woman. I am disliked by my people. I walk alone. I do not follow the customs, but I am no one's woman yet. There was no jealous sweetheart to hurt your friend. Tell me of this sugar skull you found in your room." "I'm warm," he said. "I must be close to Douglas. Some nights I almost feel how close he is to me. I expect to run into him at the Thursday night band concert or in a bar. Whoever left this sugar skull in my room was pretty silly. If they think they can scare me off, they're wrong. I'm scared, but I won't go away. The sugar skull is a mistake. It only confirms my suspicions. They should have let matter stand, not bothered me. Maybe I am close to Douglas, but maybe I would have missed the next clue. Miss Douglas and gone back to the United States next week." "Maybe you can't miss the next clue," Celia replied logically. "Maybe they knew your next move was so obvious you couldn't miss your friend. Therefore, they warned you before you made the move. Not a very pleasant warning. What is your next move?" "I don't know." "But they know. It's not something you'd have to do today, but something you'd have to do before you finally left town next week. What would that be, Señor Roby? What would you do in the next week? What would you see that you have not already seen?" He had the answer. She saw that he had the answer, and she put her hand swiftly to gentle him. He drew deeply on his cigarette and flickered his eyes, and his breath came in and out of him in deep moves of his lungs. "Tell me," she said after a time, "what is the one place where you have not been that you will go before you leave town next week?" He took a deep breath, let it hiss out slowly. "The catacombs," he said. Chapter 2. The Funeral. The graveyard was at the top of the hill. It looked over the town. The town was hills. Hills that issued down in trickles and then creeks, and then rivers of cobblestone into the town, to flood the town with rough and beautiful stone that had been polished into smooth flatness over the centuries. It was a pointed irony that the very best view of the town could be had from the cemetery hill, where high thick walls surrounded a collection of tombstones like wedding cakes, frosted with white angels and iced with ribbons and scrolls, one against another, toppling, shining cold. It was like a cake confectioner's yard. Some tombs were big as beds. From here, on freezing evenings, you could look down at the candlelit valley, hear dogs bark, sharp as tuning forks, banged on a flat stone, see all the funeral processions coming up the hill in the dark, coffins balanced on shoulders. Robbie Sibber stood halfway up the hill looking at the cemetery wall. "Don't go up today," said Celia. "Can't you wait until tomorrow?" His voice was flat. "No. Now that I've thought of it, it's the one place. It was in my mind all the time. But I wouldn't go look. I wouldn't let myself believe until today. I had to look every place else first. The last place I wanted to look was in the catacombs. I've heard of that horrible place and those mummies standing wired against the wall." He walked up the hill slowly and looked at a little soft drink stand. He laughed wearily. "It's warm, Celia. Have an orange crush with me. We need something." "You look sick." "I'm going to be a whole lot sicker. I'm going to be sick all the rest of my life after today." They stood in the sunlight, drinking down the bottled drinks, making foolish sucking noises on the bottlenecks with her lips, not thinking anything. He finished the bottle and looked at the little girl who tended the stand. She held the little candy corpse in her hand. She was eating it. He didn't move. He watched her eat it. Then he turned, sighing, and walked up the hill, not talking, with Celia's shadow, moving long and easy beside his own shadow, up and up to where the wrought iron gate swung, squealing, opening on ancient hinges to the graveyard. By the church, by the plaza, under the dark green trees, the people sat waiting. They waited for something to happen. When it happened, they would get up and run around and be part of it. The sun was lowering over the many hills, showing in dull flashes the tin sidings of the silver mines high up. The people waited in the square until finally it was very dark. Robbie Sibber came down the street slowly. He stopped and looked in the many windows. He went in one place and had a beer. Celia was with him, would not leave him. He didn't think of her, though. It wasn't important. Douglas McClure was up on top of that hill right now, in the catacombs. You walked up the hill and paid the graveyard attendant a peso, and he flung back a steel door, and you went down a spiral stone stair into the earth, into the catacombs. You entered a long, dim hall with 125 mummies facing each other, standing against the walls, their mouths open, their beards intact, looking as if they had leapt up on your entrance, screaming silently. You walked along the line of standing dead. You looked into the bony, skin faces until you came to the body of Douglas McClure. Robbie Sibber walked up the slanting street until it gave into the plaza before the church. Somewhere he lost Celia. A brass band with 5 busy members marched briskly up one alley, flinging off a tune with a vicious, unpredictable centrifuge of a musical wheel. The men in hand-woven pants beat drums, spat into trumpets, or chewed lovingly their long black clarinets. Robbie heard them dully, with no appreciation, as they moved by him. "What will you do now?" "I don't know. I'm sick. I'm afraid. Tonight I need people all around me on all sides to protect me. I need noise. I'm going to stay here in the middle of the fiesta until Celia comes. I won't go up any dark alleys. I won't go alone one moment. I'll stand here in the plaza where he can't get me."
"Who?"
"The person who killed Douglas McClure." The band marched up on the bandstand, played Yankee Doodle. It came out of the horns of the strange loss, changed by the breath that blew it and the minds that thought it before the blowing. It was not quite Yankee Doodle. It was something frightening. "I'm going to be killed," thought Robbie Sibber. "Don't talk like an ass. Go to the police." What good would that do? Maybe they already know about McClure's body being in the catacomb, but kept it quiet so as not to get in trouble with the American government. Those things happen. A bull was carried into the square, a papier-mâché bull carried on the shoulders of old Tomas, grunting and charging about. The bull rested on a reed frame, or what appeared to be reeds. How did Douglas McClure die? He had a strange hole between his eyes. A bullet hole? No, a strange kind of hole. I don't know. The people jumped up from the benches. Something exploded. Old Tomas, lighting fuses on the bamboos and reeds under his papier-mâché bull, ran about the plaza chasing people before him. The bull erupted. Involuntarily, Robbie cried out. The bull gave off great balls of flame. From tubes under the bull shot out, one after another, brilliant, round, blazing fireballs that hit, streamed, gushed into the crowd. The crowd buckled, fell back, closed in. Old Tomas shuffled forward, the bull on his shoulders, laughing. The bull's eyes glowed, flashed, banged out long traces of yellow and orange fire. There were hidden Roman candles, dozens of them, in and under the bull. All these stabbed the air, spurting, beating the children mercilessly with swift fire. The children waved red handkerchiefs. The bull charged. Everyone screamed and laughed. Under the green, unmoving trees, people stumbled and fell over benches to get out of the way of the fire-throwing bull. A little boy caught a fireball in his shirt front, leaped into a trough, splashing. Now the bull was all afire, all aglow, all illumination. People held onto each other, panting, holding their sides, gasping for breath from the claim. Robbie Sibber let himself be taken into the crowd. He began to run, first slowly, his face ashen, then more swiftly. He felt the need to be at their very center, to whirl, to fall, to laugh, to clutch at them, to use them as shields for himself against whoever might be watching and waiting for him. And he wanted to forget. He ran and laughed. At first, it was not a very good laugh. Then it was hysterically exhausted. But he kept leaping hedges as the bull charged first at him, then at someone else. The bull whirled in all directions, booming out firecrackers. An immense cloud of smoke filled the air. Somebody set off a dozen rockets, which pierced the sky and blew out into a grand high architecture of red across the stars. The bull charged again. The crowd parted away from Robbie Sibber. He turned, crying out in confused delight. For a moment there was no fear but the simple fear of the firecracker bull and old shambling Tomas. A fireball caught him on the ear. He cried out. There were explosions. He felt something hit him in the arm. He dodged. He laughed. He stumbled over somebody. Celia was there. He saw her in the crowd at the edge of the square, standing watching his wild gyrations. He freed himself by pushing and shoving and shouting all through the roiling mob until he made a path through her to her. He almost fell as he reached her. She looked at him with a look of ancient, tired horror. She was looking at the blood pouring from his arm, warm and constant. "You've been shot," she said. The band blared away in a mechanical tumult. He fell down upon his knees and held on to Celia, and her arms came down to hold him and try to lift him up. Doctors are no use in Mexico. If you're hysterical, they are so calm and quiet in their inefficiency that you want to scream. Maybe you do, a little. The doctor bandages your wound quietly. It is the fiesta, señor. No more, no more. Some happy man fired a gun. Simply an accident. You will not prosecute, señor? Who is there to prosecute? No one. And this? This one was in yours, perhaps only a Roman candle made it, eh? No? Well, it is deeper. Yes, I will admit, a bullet. But only from a happy soul. Forget it, senor, forget it. Robbie Sibber came from the doctor's office, Celia with him. Did you see who fired the shot, Celia? I saw nothing. Nobody saw. There was so much running and noise, but you are lucky, only a flesh wound. That doctor, sitting there, philosophizing on death. You're not safe anywhere in Mexico, alone or in a crowd. Perhaps it would be better if you went back to the United States. No, I'll stay. I've got to get Douglas out of the catacombs and shipped home where he belongs. Then there'll be the investigation, In the morning, though, I'm bushed. He looked at her coldly. She was alien. Everything was frightening and alien. He wasn't even certain of her now. Maybe she? "You're tired," she said. "You'd better go to bed." He returned to his hotel. The funeral awaited him. It was on a little shingle, lying on his bed, the funeral. He closed the door after switching on the light, and he lay against the door, looking at the funeral. It was a tiny funeral. There was a tiny priest with a tiny nut for a head, holding a tiny black book and raising a tiny hand in a holy gesture. There were three little altar boys bearing small banners. There was a small coffin and a small sugar candy corpse in it, and there was an altar with a picture on it of the corpse. The picture was of Robbie Sibber. He looked around. Someone had gone through his luggage, found an old photo of his, clipped it small, and pasted it on the little altar. There was no note with the funeral. The funeral was enough. These little shingles with tiny figures were sold in the market for Dia de Muerte, but this one was just a little out of place on his bed in the waiting, silent room, and he was cold, very cold, and he began to shiver. There was a tapping on the door behind him. He started. Then coldly he opened the door. "Señor," a hiss. Old Tomas stood in the dim hall. There was a smell of sweat and wine. "It is important that I see you." "I'm tired." Tomas looked in at the bed at the little funeral. "It is about that, señor." Tomas pointed at the funeral. "A little while ago, I came through the hall. I saw someone go in your room with that small funeral. I thought you would want to know this." Robbie blinked several times. "Did you see his face?" "It was no man, señor. It was a woman." "A woman?" "Señorita Celia. I saw her." "You'd better go downstairs. I'm cold and you're drunk." "She did not see me. She held a funeral in her hands and went in and came out a few minutes later." "You are not well, señor?" Robbie held on to the door, shutting his eyes. "I am not well." "Señor, I have watched the señorita each day with you. This is not a thing for Mexican women to do. It is not our custom for a woman to be on the streets with a man, or to see a man alone, or to walk alone. And yesterday, Señora Licon, who makes Sugar Skull, said to me, 'Ah, that Celia woman, she's insane.' She came to me and asked me to make a Sugar Skull and put the name of the Americano on top of it, Robbie. I thought nothing of this thing, señor, until tonight, when I saw her take the funeral in, and then when you were hurt at the fiesta. I thought all of these things over and came to you." Robbie sat down, heavily careful of the bandage along the right side of his chest. "Can you take me to Señora Licon tonight?" "Si, señor." "I must talk to her about the Sugar Skull." "Si." Old Tomas wet his lips. His dark face grew darker, his dark eyes glowed. "I thought all of this strange, señor, for in the past there was another Americano."
"Another?"
"Sit down, señor. You look very pale." "Yes, another Americano at this hotel a year ago. He and the señorita were together much. I saw them go in and out of the hotel together." Robbie talked quietly to the floor. "Celia, Celia. And then one day, that other Americano, he vanished."
"Yes, I know."
"And this Celia, she showed surprise at his being gone. A clever woman. She removed his luggage herself. Of this we may be certain."
"Why didn't you go to the police?"
Robbie studied the man.
"For what, señor?
An Americano goes away, perhaps to the United States. Is that murder? Is that bad, señor?" "No, it is only this week and the things I have seen that make me think. The woman Celia with you, your injury tonight, the Sugar Skull, the little funeral. Then I think back. I remember this other Americano. Then I come to you. Will you see Señora Licon now, señor?"
"I'll see her.
Where do we go?"
"A little way."
Chapter 3. Under a Madman's Moon. They went down the street of the coffin makers. Even this late at night, there was tapping and sawing of wood. Through the open door, you saw the coffin makers joking at their work. Celia thought Robbie Sibber sweet, gentle-eyed Celia. What happened? Did you love Douglas McClure, and did he do something to you that was not of your Mexican logic and custom? And then did you kill him in some sudden passion, as most killings occur in Mexico? Oh, death is quick down here. It's not the slow, brooding poison in the plan. It is the instant act for which, a moment later, you are sorry. A blow, a knife, a gun, quick and over. Did Douglas say or do something, try to hold or kiss you? Did your family dislike him? Was your reputation hurt by being seen with him? A simple thing to us Americans, but not to you. Was that it, Celia? And so you killed him, in one passionate instant, took his luggage from his room. It looked simple, as if he'd gone away. Then you let an unidentifiable naked body be found, to be put in the catacombs. Maybe so you could go down and laugh at him once in a while. I don't know. And then I come, and you try to warn me away. But I'm not going. This way, senor. They turned down a dark alley. The stars were clear and cold. A dog barked across the stone valley. A guitar picked out a fine, clear crystal chord. A voice sang somewhere sadly. How much further, Tomas? A little way, senor. They went up a hill in the moonlight. There was no way to get McClure's body out of the catacombs, was there, Celia? Thought Robbie. It was found and put down there. But you couldn't bribe anyone to get it out. It would have given you away. Maybe you didn't want to get it out. Maybe you've been playing with me. Maybe you wanted me to find Douglas there. The moon was a white, pallid eye staring over the sky and the empty land. Their shadows hung under them. They breathed hard with the climbing. They turned in at a familiar-looking building. There were banners on the outside fence played by the wind. This is the bullring, Tomas. Yes, the bullring. Does Señora Licón live here? She has no home. She lives beneath the bullring, and there she makes her sugar skulls and the little shingle funerals. Here. They walked down to the clear, moon-filled, silent space of the bullring. The sand was a white, dimpled sea. The barreras, the stands, went around in moon-drenched circles, empty and quiet. How do you feel, señor? Not so good. That was a climb. Look over there, said Tomas. They looked. Tomas walked to a black bundle that lay on the sand. Why, señor, someone has left a bullfighter's equipment here. There was a scarlet cape. There was a little bireta, and there was some tiny black ballet slippers and a sword which shone in the light. Someone forgot them, said Robbie uneasily. Tomas bent to touch the articles. It is a shame these were forgotten. These are good things. He picked up the bireta and found it carefully. Have you seen the bullfight, senor? A few times. I didn't like it. Senor, you Americanos. Tomas fed the bireta to his head. In the moonlight, his body straightened. He held his hands down. How do I look, senor? Fine, fine. Now, if you'll take me to Señora Licón. Do I not look fine? Fine indeed, but... Did you know that once, many years ago, senor, I was the best bullfighter in all of Mexico? Undoubtedly, but please, senor, to listen. Tomas was very tall suddenly, with the moon over him casting a shadow long on the sand. Suddenly, he was not hunched. The muscles were released, the dark chin was up. The old eyes flashed with new fire. Once I fought three bulls here, in one day, he cried. Oh, there were people in all the barreras to the sky. When I was done, they cut off the ears of the bulls and gave them to me. The people threw down hats and gloves and purses at me. It was like a rain, he said it proudly. Robbie looked at him and said not a word. They both stood looking at one another coldly. Tomas bent and took up the sword and the cape. I handled the Veronica so and so. He whirled to show how it was done. Beautifully, he bent and put on the little ballet slippers in place of the huaraches he had kicked off. Now, senor, he walked towards Robbie. Senor Alicón? Yes, yes, the maker of candy skulls, Damas pointed. There she is now, you see? Robbie turned. Simultaneously, Tomas struck him a blow on the back of the neck. Señor! Robbie cried out. He leaped back and almost fell. He clapped his hand to his neck and discovered it was pierced by three tiny needles, to which were attached little fluttering ribbons, red, white, and green. He pulled them out and cast them down. Tomas! Señor! Cried Thomas. The banderillas, the pikes for the neck of the bull. Have you seen the bullfight, senor? In which the banderilleros stick the banderillas into the neck of the bull? This I have just done. Tomas, Tomas, shouted the American, backing up. Tomas struck at him with a sword. The sword went through Robbie's leg in and out. He collapsed and fell bleeding. Tomas! Tomas bent over him in the moonlight. Do you know what happened tonight, senor? Tomas gasped, a sprawled man. I tried to kill you in the fiesta. It was easy, with my gun hidden under the framework of the charging bull. But you escaped, senor. Take me to the candy woman, Tomas. Robbie could not breathe, his mouth open and shut violently. He was sick. There is no candy woman. Do you know what will happen tomorrow morning, senor? He shouted. Tomorrow the woman Celia will ask for you, and you will be gone from the hotel. Your luggage gone. You gone. Robbie tried to get up. Get up, said Tomas. I am ready for you. Robbie gained his foot. Pain was firing his wounded leg. He stood swaying. Tomas, you're crazy. Put down the sword, you fool. No. Why should you want to kill me? Because. Tomas adjusted the biret on his head. It would have been ridiculous save for the pain and the blood and the stark moonlight and the clear sky. I'll shout, said Robbie. People will hear. You would not do that and spoil the game, senor. They would not have to kill you quickly. The sword between the eyes. Robbie shivered. He saw Douglas McClure in the catacombs again. Now the strange hole in the skull was understood. The hole of a bullfighter's sword. This was how McClure had died. We shall have a little game, senor. I am the greatest toreador in the world. You, senor, will be the bull. You will charge me. I will lead you on. You will charge again. I will nick your arms, your legs, your chest. The moon will watch, and the stars will fill the barreras. What have I done, Tomas? Each day I have watched you go in and come out of the hotel. I have seen Celia with you. She is of us. She is not of you. Tomas stood there tall and proud. In the sunlight you walked and laughed and did not speak to me. Each day I saw you touch her and laugh with her. And I hated you, senor. Yes, even as I hated the other one. The one last year who went in and out of the hotel. The young Yankee. The ridiculous tourist. And Celia had only eyes for him. As now it is only you she sees. She has no eyes for Tomas. Tomas was once the toast of all Mexico. From Osaka to Guadalajara, Monterrey. No, Tomas is old now. No longer can he dance in the ring. No bull would look at him, much less a woman. Tomas is not fit for swine. People spit on him. Tomas was gored by a bull many years ago. He made a jerking motion of his hand. The smooth flat of his belly was revealed under the shirt, the scarred flat brown belly with a gore mark deep puckering it. See, senor, see? My mark of honor, my profession. But what are scars to young women? You walked and laughed with her. I watched her with the other, and when I could no longer see them together, I guided him here one night, I the toreador, and he the silly animal, and I killed him. Now you have come, and you too shall die. Tomas, I hold nothing against you, old man. I am not old, raged Tomas, running slightly forward, making a vicious sweep with a sword. She thinks me old, yes. That Celia one. Each day she passes me on my bench, does not look at me, and each day of each year I've gazed at her beauty as she walked, and I said to myself, these Yankees shall not have her. As many as come to walk with her, I will kill. One, and then two, and then three, perhaps a dozen before I am caught. They shall not have her. I will have her. He cut the air with his sword. Now move, Yankee. Do not stand. Move, run, charge me. Give me a fight. My leg, I can't move. I will make you move. And Tomas beat him across the face with his sword until the anger made Robbie leap forward on his agonized leg. Tomas dodged. Good, he cried, swirling the cape. Another, Robbie stumbled forward. And another. Good, good. Robbie stood panting. Tomas looked at the moon. It is late. It is time for the finish. You will run and I will put the sword in your brain. He held the cape so, fluttering in the cold wind. The moonlight lay over all. Robbie's leg pulsed like a massive heart. He could not see well. The earth tilted and the stars tilted. Tomas, he said gently. Come, said Tomas, waving his cape, the sword out, cold shining in the wind. All right, said Robbie. Now, said Tomas. Now Robbie leaped. The sword glittered. Robbie fell, rolled sideways, kept rolling. He struck the leg of the toreador. He grabbed. Tomas shrieked. Tomas fell. They were together on the white sand, wild and in the cape, with a sword held now by one, now by another. Then one of them got clear, stood up, the sword in his hand. The sword sank down through, pinning the other to the white moonlit sand. This is for me, said the one with the wild sword swaying. He pulled the sword out and put it in the squirming body again. And this is for Celia, out and in again. And this is for Douglas McClure. When Celia met Robbie, he was coming down the street limping in the early morning, limping fresh from the doctor's office, carrying something small and white and sugar in his hand. It was very early. The sun was just rising among the blue hills and the church bells were sounding as she saw him from a distance. Robbie stopped, stood, took a deep breath of the incredibly sweet charcoal air. Then he lifted the little white sugar skull with the name Robbie on it, and he broke it into several fragments and finished eating it even as he walked up and said good morning. Chewing and swallowing, he smiled and answered her.